This is Brownfield's Year in Review for 2017. I'm Tom Stever. The election of Donald Trump as president brought new leadership to the U.S. Department of Agriculture for 2017. But as Brownfield's Ken Anderson reports, the process of getting new people in place has taken time and has been anything but smooth.
Strong voter turnout in Midwestern farm states in November of 2016 was widely credited with helping Donald Trump become president. So some ag-related individuals and groups were disappointed that Trump took so long to choose his new Secretary of Agriculture. Trump's choice, former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue, was announced on January 19th, just a day before the presidential inauguration, and it was the last cabinet appointment announced. Nonetheless, Perdue's nomination was met with praise from most ag groups. American Farm Bureau President and fellow Georgian Zippy Duball was very pleased.
I know how much he appreciates agriculture, and I think it's a great choice.
But as was the case with many of Trump's appointments, Perdue had to wait several weeks until late March to finally receive his confirmation hearing, and then another month until late April before his nomination was approved by the full Senate. Finally, on April 25th, Perdue made his debut at the USDA.
I've been waiting to see y'all, and it looks like y'all been waiting to see me too, right?
The next three appointments to the USDA were not announced until July. Nominated as USDA Deputy Secretary was longtime American Soybean Association CEO Steve Senske. Indiana Ag Director Ted McKinney was tabbed to be Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agriculture. And Sam Clovis, a Trump campaign advisor and former professor at Morningside College in Sioux City, Iowa, was picked to be Undersecretary for Research, Education, and Economics. Senske and McKinney sailed through the confirmation process, but Clovis was eventually forced to withdraw from consideration over concerns that he didn't have the background to be the USDA's chief scientist. And some of his past comments on social issues also came back to haunt him. On September 1st, the Trump administration announced two more USDA undersecretary nominees. Iowa Ag Secretary Bill Northey as Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation, and Nebraska Ag Director Greg Ibaugh as Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs. Ibaugh was confirmed by the Senate in late October.
I'm excited, a little bit scared too, of course, because it's new.
But Bill Northey's nomination ran into a snag when Texas Senator Ted Cruz placed a hold on his Senate confirmation vote. Cruz said he would not lift that hold until the Trump administration addressed issues that he and others had raised about the renewable fuel standard. In early December, Northey told Brownfield he'd just have to wait until things played out in Washington.
It won't be the last political kind of dynamic that I'll have to work myself through, so I'm very comfortable in whatever the timing needs to be.
Cruz finally got his RFS meeting with Trump in early December, but as of this recording, he had not yet released his hold on Northey's nomination vote. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Ken Anderson.
President Trump used a pro-renewable fuels message to generate support in rural America during his campaign. But as Mark Dorenkamp reports, some were surprised when Trump selected Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to lead the Environmental Protection Agency.
Pruitt was one of several cabinet-level officials appointed by Trump who at one time publicly criticized the renewable fuel standard. Pruitt fielded questions about the RFS during his confirmation hearing, telling senators he would honor the intent of the statute.
It's the job of the administrator to enforce the program, to ensure that the intent of Congress as far as the RFS is upheld. I will do that.
Shortly after Pruitt was confirmed as EPA administrator, rumors of a possible change to the RFS began to swirl. Renewable Fuels Association CEO Bob Dineen claimed President Trump had notified him that an executive order changing the point of obligation from ethanol refiners to position holders at the terminal was imminent. The White House would deny such an order existed. The point of obligation remains contentious, with Texas Senator Ted Cruz citing that issue as a reason for holding up the nomination of Bill Northey to a USDA post so Cruz could meet with the president. The meeting took place with Trump telling lawmakers on all sides of the renewable fuels debate to find some common ground. And after months of speculation, the final renewable volume obligations for 2018 were announced at the end of November. Dineen called the RVOs a mixed bag for the renewable fuels industry.
It does affirm the president's support for the renewable fuel standard generally, and the increased ethanol use specifically, but we view it largely as a missed opportunity because they could have done more.
For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Mark Dorenkamp.
For years, the EPA's rulemaking on the waters of the U.S. has been a thorn in the side of farmers and farm groups. Many of those in agriculture feared that if put into effect, the EPA WOTUS rule, as it became known, would make designated waterways almost impossible to farm. Producers and farm groups have become less fearful. In fact, WOTUS, one of the major ag stories of 2016, became mostly an afterthought this past year, as Mark Dorenkamp reports.
The controversial Waters of the U.S. rule was effectively rescinded by President Trump shortly after taking office. The rule had been tied up in litigation for months following public outcry of government overreach by the EPA and Army Corps of Engineers under the Obama administration. New EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt told Brownfield in August his plan of providing certainty to landowners.
When the EPA defines the water of the United States as being a puddle, a dry creek bed, and an ephemeral drainage ditch, then clearly they're misplaced and they've not provided, you know, great certainty to landowners.
As the EPA continues to draft a replacement, the pre-2015 Clean Water Act standards remain in place. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Mark Dorenkamp.
Crop protection companies have scrambled to stay ahead of herbicide-resistant weeds. Companies touted the release of soybeans and cotton that tolerate the potent broadleaf killer dicamba, a chemistry that already has years on it. To say there have been problems with the technology is to understate the issue. The herbicide tends to volatilize and drift, damaging susceptible crops. The estimate of dicamba-injured soybean acreage in the U.S., as reported by state extension weed scientists, reached more than 3.5 million acres in 2017. Brownfield's Julie Harker has our story.
New formulations of an old chemistry to control herbicide-resistant weeds became one of the top stories of 2017. Dicamba formulations approved for the 2017 season for over-the-top application on dicamba-resistant soybeans and cotton. Damage reports to non-resistant crops, especially soybeans, began in early June. Arkansas Seed Growers Association President Scooter Hodges told Brownfield he'd seen damage and heard that as much as 20,000 acres had been hit with off-target dicamba herbicide.
It could be bad. It could be very bad.
Missouri weed scientist Kevin Bradley the following week said there were reports of dicamba drift injury in his state.
All I could say is in Missouri, the ones I'm aware of, they're all the new formulations that have been applied, and we still have some off-target movement.
Reports came in from Illinois as well. In early July, Missouri Ag Director Chris Chin issued an order to stop the sale and use of all dicamba products labeled for use in Missouri. That same day, Arkansas lawmakers approved a 120-day ban of dicamba. Weed scientist Aaron Hager of Illinois told Brownfield he was frustrated and extremely disappointed with the crop protection industry's response to dicamba soybean damage.
I've never seen such instances of denial that has taken place by the industry, and my hope is that I never see this again.
Both Missouri and Arkansas recommended that dicamba herbicides only be used for burn down in the early season of 2018, and Arkansas proposed a cutoff date for use of dicamba by April 15th. Monsanto complained that that date was arbitrary. In mid-December, an Arkansas legislative subcommittee refused to approve the April 15th cutoff date for dicamba applications, a decision applauded by Monsanto official Scott Partridge.
It's clear that the message coming from the legislative committee is that the plant board needs to actually look at the science, study it carefully, look what's being done in surrounding states, and come up with a solution that enables the growers in their state to have access to this important technology during the growing season.
University of Arkansas weed scientist Jason Norsworthy said the new dicamba label restriction should help address the issues of physical drift and tank cleanout. But he says volatility is still a big concern.
We're going to have to understand when volatility occurs, how volatility occurs, and then try to optimize times of the year that we use these products, and understand that as we move into warmer and warmer portions of the growing season, the risk for volatility is going to likewise increase.
He says they're looking at dicamba tank mix partners, such as herbicides that potentially could have an impact on volatility. Norsworthy told Brownfield he was optimistic and hopeful that 2018 would not be a repeat of 2017. At the University of Missouri Crop Management Conference, Dr. Kevin Bradley, with his presentation about dicamba, Where Do We Go From Here, said just because yields were good in Missouri did not mean that there was not yield loss from dicamba damage. A Missouri farmer at the conference agreed with Dr. Bradley that volatility is one of the causes.
I have farmed for 52 years, and I have applied many, many different chemicals, and this problem with dicamba is volatility, and until we address that, we will not have a solution.
And the university continues to research temperature inversions, another cause of drift. Dr. Bradley told participants of the conference that there has never been a time when there has been so much division between the companies and university weed scientists.
I don't have any desire for there to be this rift between us and the companies. I just got to call it like I see it. That's what I'm paid to do, okay? And so we're telling you the science as we see it.
Extra training and certification is being required by many states before dicamba can be used next year. Bradley recommends using it for burn down only early in the season. Meanwhile, Monsanto officials say they expect extend soybean acres to double in 2018 because of the good results farmers got from the product in 2017. I'm Julie Harker on Brownfield.
Thank you, Julie. U.S. farm policy is decided by Congress every 5 years. At least they're known as five-year pieces of legislation. But it's become a tradition that there's so much lag time in debating these bills that they're commonly extended until the next bill can be hammered out, voted on, and signed by whoever's in the Oval Office. The current farm bill is due to expire in September of 2018. And for quite some time, farm groups have made clear what they'd like to see in the next farm bill. Listening sessions have been held across the country as Congress prepares to debate the 2018 farm bill. Farmers showed up in force to voice their priorities in what will become U.S. farm policy. Brownfield's Amy Seitz has more.
Nearly all farm groups agree that maintaining a strong crop insurance program in the next farm bill is essential. Iowa Farmer and National Corn Growers Association board member Bruce Rauer told the Senate Ag Committee that commodity title programs and federal crop insurance are necessary risk management tools that must be maintained.
If you reduce the insurance pool, it has the potential to increase costs of the program and premiums, therefore. And so those type of proposed changes could be a threat to effectiveness of crop insurance coverage.
A farmer in Michigan agreed, stating that a strong safety net program was at the top of their priority list. Jana Fritz raises corn, soybeans, and dry edible beans in eastern Michigan.
Being able to make sure that our producers remain viable even if given rough circumstances for a production year. Incredibly important for our farm as well as others in my area. Have utilized it as long as it's been available, and really critical, again, as a young farmer in making sure that we can continue farming into the future.
A crop insurance manager says the industry is preparing for more challenges to crop insurance in the next farm bill. Doug Yoder with Country Financial points to the challenges to the 2014 farm bill.
When it went to the full Senate floor for debate, 236 amendments were launched attacking crop insurance. Now, we successfully, thanks to our member involvement, held off all of those changes except one. That conservation compliance tied to the premium discounts, that's the only thing that ended up passing.
Senate Ag Committee ranking member Debbie Stabenow says when writing the 2018 Farm Bill, Ag committees will be tasked to do more with less available funding.
So it's still going to be tough, but certainly as a risk management tool, crop insurance is still going to be at the top of the list.
The current Farm Bill funds Ag programs through 2018. In addition to funding, some improvements are needed. Livestock producers are concerned about having an adequate foot and mouth disease vaccine bank in place, as FMD is an enormous threat to the U.S. livestock industry. Missouri Pork Association Executive Vice President Don Nicodem was part of a livestock panel in October pushing for funding of a foot and mouth disease vaccine bank.
To put it in perspective, economists
conservatively estimate that should we get FMD and no way to deal with it, it's going to amount to about a $200 billion, that's $200 billion, cost to the United States.
The National Pork Producers Council is asking Congress to authorize annual funding in the five-year farm bill of $150 million for the FMD Vaccine Bank. The nutrition title, which makes up 80% of the farm bill, the foreign market development and access programs, the conservation title, and the dairy margin protection program were also discussed in detail at listening sessions this year. I'm Amy Seitz for Brownfield's Year in Review.
The Trump administration proposed sweeping changes in budget items, many of which would affect farmers. In March, people got a taste of what the new administration would make as priority areas with the release of President Trump's budget proposals. Brownfield's Nicole Heslip has more.
The Trump administration's proposed 2017 budget was expected to be released, with widespread sharp cuts making up for increases in defense spending. Senate Ag Committee ranking Democrat Demi Stabenow of Michigan strongly opposed the proposal, saying it was not the time to cut ag program funding.
I know that we're at a point where farmers are having a tough time with prices going down, and this will be devastating to Michigan farmers if a 21% cut is, in fact, implemented.
Stabenow said she opposes USDA cuts and the elimination of the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative.
We've got to make sure this does not pass Congress, which is the bottom line.
The president proposed eliminating the $300 million regional fund in his 2017 budget and cutting 31% of the EPA's total budget. American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall told Brownfield the 21% proposed cuts to USDA would devastate agriculture.
It couldn't come at a worse time because the farm economy is as bad as it's been in decades.
In May, Congress restored most of President Trump's proposed EPA and USDA funding cuts. The spending bill maintained almost all current EPA funding, including the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. Trump's 2018 government funding proposal again saw widespread cuts. Minnesota Farm Bureau President Kevin Papp told Brownfield, while the federal deficit needs to be addressed, balancing the budget on the backs of farmers was not the right approach. Papp expressed concern about the president's request to cut more than $230 billion from mandatory farm bill spending over 10 years.
That's a very small part of the total budget. And quite frankly, farm programs, including crop insurance, are a very small part of the entire USDA budget.
As of this recording, Congress has yet to finalize the 2018 budget. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Nicole Heslop.
The U.S. House gave final approval to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson opposes it, saying it leaves a $1.5 trillion hole in the federal budget that could mean farm program spending cuts later. On the other hand, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is pleased with the bill. Still ahead, the 2017 harvest involved pleasant surprises for farmers who thought yields would be down significantly. But after this break, the story that generated the most web reaction of 2017, it's about pizza. Just ahead on Brownfield's Year in Review.